Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are few peoples whose intelligence I admire more and whose use of it for the public good, I believe, matters more than our first guest. He is Andy McCarthy, a former federal prosecutor who has become one of the country's foremost authors, pundits, commentators, and extraordinary resources on the nexus, I think of it as, between national security and the law. He is the author of myriad incredibly important books, including my personal favorite, The Grand Jihad. He is also to be found on the pages, or virtual pages at least, of National Review Online and PJ Media, as well as Fox News and elsewhere. We're always so pleased to have him with us. Andy McCarthy, welcome back. Good to have you, sir.
Frank, thanks for having me.
Let me talk to you about, first things first, I guess, an indictment that was handed down in connection with this brutal attack in New York City recently, involving a truck that was used as an instrument of murder on a bike path. I'm interested in particular, Andy, in your analysis of the charges that have now been recently introduced that I'm thinking for the first time, maybe I missed something, but for the first time that I'm aware of, call into play the whole racketeering body of law and what we do to prohibit that. Talk a little bit about that as it relates to this problem of jihad and whether it may be a new opportunity for us to try to roll it up in America.
Well, Frank, it seemed to me when the initial charges came out against the West Side Highway jihadists who killed 8 people, they were obviously struggling with something or to find something in the federal code that they could charge him with. And the dilemma I think they had is that, you know, murder for the most part is a state crime. It's not charged federally unless there's some federal interest in it. So there's like a murder provision in the drug laws, and there's a murder provision, as we'll discuss, in the racketeering laws. There's laws against murders of federal officials and diplomats and like. So in a federal murder case, there has to be a federal interest. The state murder case is usually much more simple and straightforward, because the only thing you focus on is the murder, that you don't have to show a particular governmental interest in it. But the problem, of course, in New York is that there's no death penalty. And if you wanted to make this a capital case, and if it's worth having capital punishment, this is obviously the kind of case that it should be invoked in. It has to be done federally. So I suggested shortly after the arrest that what they should be thinking about is murder in aid of racketeering, which is a potential federal crime. And it seemed to me to fit the fact pattern, because what we know about this Saifulo character is that he was hoping by his atrocity to get into the not only the good graces, but the an operational relationship with the Islamic State terrorist organization. And in fact, they put out a statement after he killed these 8 people and wounded 12 others, accepting him and designating him as a caliphate soldier. Murder in aid of racketeering is a murder that's done to either gain entrance into or maintain or increase a person's status in a racketeering organization. And under federal law, an enterprise, we usually think of this in terms of mafia families, but it's any, as the saying goes in federal law, any association in fact, whether it's a legitimate one or an illegitimate one, so it could be like a mafia family or a labor union, that conducts its affairs through what the law calls a pattern of racketeering, which could also include acts of murder. So it seemed to me that ISIS fits the federal definition for what an enterprise is, a racketeering enterprise. And what Saifullah was clearly trying to do was enter into ISIS. So happily, it looks like the federal prosecutors in New York saw it the same way. And that's how they finally indicted it when the case was charged formally by the grand jury a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I'd like to think you inspired them, Andy. But in any event, they've came around to what seems like a sensible approach. Does it open up a new toolbox for us in dealing with, I would argue, not just the guys who are in the violent jihad business, but racketeering in kind of the mafia technique of, you know, controlling and otherwise exercising undue and improper influence on others, perhaps ultimately against the Muslim Brotherhood, which is operating in this country, as you've documented in your books and writings for years?
Well, I think, Frank, that this, it's an interesting question, because when we indicted the Blind Sheikh case back in 1993, one of the things, and this is probably because I was an old mafia prosecutor by then, one of the things we thought about was going the route of the racketeering laws on the theory that the Sheikh's cell in the New York area was a racketeering enterprise, as that's defined in law. The reason that we didn't go that route then was there was an oddity in the way the courts were interpreting the RICO statute, which required the government to prove that the organization had an economic purpose. And even though there's a fundraising component, obviously, to terrorist organizations, the economic purpose is not really their real purpose. A mafia family is very different from a terrorist organization. Mafia guys are in it for the money. The terrorist guys are obviously in it for something else. So we went away from that way of thinking. And then the courts, the Supreme Court, ultimately ruled that the lower federal courts had made an error in adding this requirement, because it's not in the statute. There's nothing in the statute that says you have to show an economic purpose. So it's certainly worth visiting in an appropriate case. The other thing we have to remain mindful of is terrorism law in the United States was overhauled in 1996. So if you're talking about international terrorism, and particularly international acts that are clearly committed by terrorist organizations, we have statutes now that are a perfect fit for that. The difficulty with this particular case is you're dealing with a guy who didn't have an operational tie, that at least that we know of, to the Islamic State, and was trying to get into the Islamic State and committed what would otherwise be domestic murders. So that's why you have this sort of oddball situation. But I do think that you're quite right, that to the extent that you have activities of something you can define as an enterprise hovering over the sorts of things that have to be done to make jihadism work, that the enterprise is a very effective legal construct for that. It's attractive to prosecutors because it allows you to prove up the whole enterprise, all of the criminality that goes into it. The reason that this concept was brought into the law was because prior to the 1970s, it was hard to charge mafia families because they thrived on disparate forms of criminal activity. And the law kind of counseled against, you know, proving up extortion, gambling, murder, all in the same charge or all in the same trial, because one set of crimes was thought to prejudice the defendant with respect to the other set of crimes. So the idea of the RICO enterprise was to make the crime actually belonging to the enterprise that made its living on these disparate forms of crime. So it was kind of a revolutionary idea in criminal enforcement, and I think it could be a good fit for terrorism.
This is perhaps down in the technical weeds for most of us, Sandy McCarthy, but you're a splendid guide in those weeds, needless to say. And I'm struck by it because I, as you know, we've been very concerned for quite some time about what the Muslim Brotherhood has been doing to put into place the infrastructure of jihad, specifically jihadist mosques that are used as training centers and recruitment and perhaps even arming of violent jihadists. So I will be very interested in your further thinking on this subject and writing on it as well. We have to pause for just a second. I couldn't be more pleased to say that Andy McCarthy has agreed to give us a second segment. So we will be right back with more. We'll talk about the travel ban and the special counsel right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.